Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to American Conservative Radio. I am Tracy Coyle.
And I'm Bill Hinman.
And we're going to be here tonight for another edition of Conservatives Yelling at the Future.
And boy, don't we have a whole lot to yell at.
You know, I would have considered, I took no antidepressants last week. And this week, I actually found myself smiling and singing as I drove around today. So I would suggest to you that I'm feeling positive this week, despite everything, only because I've started to listen to myself. I think that's the issue. Everything that I've said over the last 2 weeks about how Obama can't do what he wants to do,
mm-hmm.
but how he's going to try,
mm-hmm.
has suggested that, I don't know. I was in a good mood today. That's all I can say. I was in a good mood today, no matter what I heard. There's a lot of people in Wisconsin that are really upset today.
About what?
Conservatives. I'm sorry?
Oh, about what?
About the fact that Obama apparently has not decided that Jim Doyle would be his next attorney general.
Ah, okay.
Which means we get to keep him as governor for the next 3.5 years. We were kind of hoping that, you know, get the dude out of here. Go
mm-hmm.
to Washington. But
okay.
It wasn't going to happen. So that's not going to happen. And I don't know about this guy, Eric Holden, that much. So... find out what is about him. I know a lot about Jim Doyle, and as Attorney General, Jim Doyle would have had a pretty good call to be the next Janet Reno. I mean, you know.
Oh boy! Now there's a bar to hurdle over.
And I actually think that, you know, Jim Doyle's prettier. I mean, you know. Anyway,
I'm not going there. I'm sorry.
well, you know, that's the way things are.
Yeah,
the,
I know.
for those of you that are not tied in with catheters and news, Fox News has reported that Ted Stevens has lost in Alaska.
Yep, saw that.
And frankly, I'm perfectly happy with that.
Yep, and absolutely.
I know everything of what it means as far as the Senate is concerned and about a Republican. You know, the man was about as corrupt as a body pulled out of a casket 20 years later.
The guy has been convicted. Now, yeah, that hasn't been confirmed by the judge. That's going to happen in December. But the guy's been convicted. Get him out of there.
Yeah, I don't even know why it was as close as it was.
It's really kind of strange. I think people were playing a little bit of politics with that and saying, well, okay, so sure, let's elect him, and then he actually gets convicted, he gets thrown out, and then our governor can appoint somebody. But I, you know, that gets a little convoluted, and maybe not even be accurate, but you know, whatever that is, somebody with that kind of a record ought not to be in the Senate to begin with.
Well, yes, but apparently, you know, you have to be perfect to run and have to be perfectly corrupt to stay.
You know, I like that. That's, you know, that kind of seems to be currently what we have, and hopefully we can make a difference in changing that.
It just amazes me But as I said before, we didn't elect any dead people this time around, so I'm happy about that.
There you go. There you go.
There was something else. Oh, you and I were discussing before the show, and I want to share it with other people.
Okay.
The runoff that is going to happen on December 2nd in Georgia.
Yes, absolutely.
And your opinion is?
My opinion is that Chambliss is going to take that. And I say that because that was a three-person race. In Georgia, you have to have 50% plus one whenever there is that kind of a situation to actually win the seat. Chambliss got, as I recall, 49-point-something. The Libertarian got 14%, and the Democrat got whatever the difference between those and 100 is. My assessment is that there will be a significant number of the Libertarians that will vote for Chambliss. That will put him over the top.
Here's why I disagree with you now that I've had a chance to think about it a little bit. Because my initial response was, no, he's not going to make it.
Okay.
They're going to draft every single warm body or body that they can pretend is warm to vote against him on December 2nd. But I think what I wanted to say is, I'm pretty certain that most people, am I being biased here? Most people that would have realized that that race was going to be close would have realized the implication about voting for the Libertarian. And I think they just couldn't at all stomach the idea that it was going to be the Republican. And I think they're going to go mostly for the Democrat for two reasons. One, because they will not stomach the Republican. And two, because they want to give Obama the Senate. And with Stevens out in Alaska and Minnesota going to the courts, because that's where that's going to go, that puts Georgia, I believe he's already with Alaska, Obama has a filibuster-proof Senate even with just 58.
Mm-hmm.
Because the rhinos are going to give him the extra votes that he needs.
Olympia Snow, the guy from Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I figured if he got 57 or 58, it was pretty much a done deal.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if they get to 59 and then Minnesota gets decided by the courts, I think they're going to make sure that they're going to put him over the top. I really think that's what's going to happen. Just to make it a clean sweep. And, frankly, I would suggest to Republicans to do it. To let
Excuse
it happen.
Excuse me? What?
Yeah, I would. Look, Obama gets the economy for the next 2 years.
Yes, he does.
He gets the economy, and he gets Congress on his side 100% for the next 2 years. Everything that happens in the next 2 years gets laid at his foot. And the next 2 years in the economy are not going to be pretty at all. And
I agree on that one.
As a matter of fact, everything he's going to do is going to make things worse. That's my
opinion. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So I believe he's going to make it worse, and I don't think McCain could have done any better, but he's going to make it worse. And as far as I'm concerned, get rid of every opportunity for them to say, not our fault.
Yep. It's pretty hard to say not our fault when we have the presidency, the Senate, and the House of Representatives. When you control all the levers of power, it's real hard to say, oh, no, that didn't happen on my watch.
Right. It's there. And the reality is he's going to do some damage in 2 years, but the more damage that gets done in the next 2 years, the less likelihood that there'll be significant damage over the next 4. He's simply not going to have the freedom over the next 2 years with the economy to do what he wants to do.
Right.
You know, the economy is just going to go crazy. I was reading today, it's not something that's pretty noticeable if you're, an econ freak like I am and spends a lot of time looking at interest rates and how the commercial paper markets are and stuff like that. The spreads in the last 2 days have just gone nuts. Commercial paper is, in most regards, if it's not AAA paper, it's worthless at this point.
Yep.
And the AAA paper is worth almost as much as the paper that hangs in our bathrooms.
Oh, boy.
And, it's going to get considerably worse. I was talking to one of my clients today in Maryland, and he said the type of clients that are coming in the door now are not the ones that have been scraping and scrimping by for the last 2 years. These are the ones that were driving the big SUVs and had the huge houses and, had the had everything on credit. They're
mm-hmm.
coming in because they're getting slammed.
Oh, yeah.
And he said the income strata that's walking in his door right now is considerably higher than it was 6 months ago. So, and...
Yep.
Us people in the bankruptcy industry, we see the stuff first. Before everybody else starts seeing it, we see the ones
sure.
that already started falling apart.
Yep.
It's not going to be nice, and I don't wish this economy on anybody. I really don't. I'd rather us have a minor little dip in the markets and dip in the economy. Kind of flush out a little bit of the dead weight and, keep right on going, but it's not going to happen.
No, it isn't.
It's going to be big, it's going to be deep, it's going to be nasty. And we're going to get to blame it on Obama.
Yeah.
I'm just loving that idea all the hell. I'm going to invite somebody else that's come online. Because we have something interesting planned for everybody tonight. Butch, good evening.
Good evening. How are y'all?
Butch, good to hear from you.
How are you, Bill?
I'm well, thank you. And you?
I could complain, but it wouldn't help. You wouldn't want to hear it.
That's true. I've found that true to be in my own life here.
No, but doing quite well. Thanks for asking.
Good.
So I'm sorry I was running a little tardy this evening. I missed the first 10 minutes, but it sounds like we're blaming everything on Obama, so I'm a big fan.
Oh, we're not getting there yet. We're just
okay.
setting it up. We're just setting it up. So
yeah.
Actually, he's the one that's setting it up. I mean, we're just going to sit back and enjoy the show.
Yeah, I hope so.
Has anybody heard if the rumor that was going around has been confirmed at all or suggested any more strongly today? That Hillary has accepted the Secretary of State?
I have not. I have no idea.
And I have not either.
No clue.
That was the rumor that was going around yesterday.
Yep.
That she had been offered and accepted, but they have to do some stuff.
Well, one thing that I heard somebody comment on that topic the other day was that it was brilliant triangulation by Obama to keep her out of domestic affairs. In other words, if you give her state, then she can't, she can't get involved on health care and all those other, kind of pet issues. Not that she can't, but she will be much less likely to if she's in state. So I wonder if that was a huge part of the motivation to offer her that position.
Well,
if it's been offered.
I have an opinion about the State Department. I believe in aliens, and their home headquarters is the State Department.
Well, it's not like it's not like the State Department has had a conservative viewpoint like in the last 30 years. So.
Yeah, but anybody that goes in there comes out changed. I mean, okay, Colin Powell was a dove, and I don't think anybody really got the idea that he was a hawk, just besides the fact that he was, Joint Chiefs. He wasn't, a gung-ho, blow-them-all-up pieces type of, Joint Chiefs. But, what happened to Condi? I mean, she was an NSA, and she walked in there and came out French light.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Hillary going in there would be a rather interesting situation.
Well, to think about it, I mean, the name of the department is the Department of State. So, and not to wax philosophical, but I mean, you go into the Department of State, then you come out thinking that the state is the solution to all our problems. And I really think, and I know a very limited number of people that have been involved in the State Department, so this is by no means a scientific measure, but, the most totalitarian thinking people I know, philosophically, have been attached to the State Department. And I mean, I'm talking people on a very, very low level. I'm not talking about, movers and shakers and high-level appointees. I'm talking about, civil servants and foreign servants. I mean, I've had conversations of where the argument has been made to me that, statism is a good thing. It's hard to take that argument with a straight face, but people from that realm make those arguments with straight faces, and it's really it's almost funny if it wasn't so scary.
Pod people, it's pod people. I'm telling you, it's aliens.
Pod people. Yeah.
Well,
sorry.
I think you only have to look at Josh Bolton.
Sure.
To say, the bureaucracy, whatever is in charge of that doesn't like people that look at the world with a realistic view and say, you know what, folks, we are a nation state, we have interests, we are going to promote those interests, and if you oppose those interests, then we are going to do whatever we can to make sure that our interests prevail. I'm a big fan of Tom Clancy. I have read all of his novels multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that always jumps out at me is his view of the State Department as people who want to talk for talk's sake,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to accomplishing something. And as I look at real life through that viewpoint, I look at that and say, that fits the facts as I perceive them in the real world. They talk for talk's sake only.
Right.
Well, I'll debate for debate's sake. I'll argue simply to argue, as most anybody that knows the brain length of time will attest to. But for me, it's even if it doesn't serve a purpose for anybody else, it serves a very specific purpose for me. I simply think better doing that. When I have somebody to argue their positions, in opposition to me, I think better in that regard.
That's not the State Department type, and I hate to keep picking on the State Department, but that's what we're picking on. So,
right.
that sort of mentality isn't a debate type of mentality.
Oh no, I agree.
Yeah, and that's the challenge. If the State Department or those sort of thinkers believed in deliberate debate, I mean that's more of an old school legislative view of things, that, you know, our goal or our purpose is to debate issues, you know, and formulate positions based on, you know, debating topics. That's not the type of talk that that those guys are fans of by any means.
Right.
So I'm with you.
Well, CJ is in eighth grade this year, and mm-hmm. last year she had Spanish as her language, and this year she decided she wanted to take French. And we were going somewhere over the weekend, and she said, "What is the most prominent language?" And I said, "Well, it kind of depends on what you mean. Do you mean what is the most spoken language?" I said, "It's a variation of Chinese. I mean, there's over a billion speakers of it."
Right.
I said, "But if you're talking about the one that's the most important," I said, "virtually all transportation trade goes on in English. You know, so if you want to take a plane from, you know, one country to another country, the pilots and the air traffic controllers are going to speak English. You know, you might have a small airport in a country that doesn't have international flights that doesn't, but anything that has international flights, English is spoken." And she said, "Well, what is French used for?" Now, I really had to be careful with this, and I said, "Well,
yeah.
French is used for international politics."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you want to talk trade, it's going to be in English. But if you want to talk international politics, it's going to be in French.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
Unless it's in this country. If you're going to be in Europe, they all speak French in politics.
Yep.
And I said, so if you're interested in learning how to make money and spend money and trade money and stuff like that, you need to learn English well. Maybe Spanish if you're going to have businesses. Maybe Chinese if you're going to do a lot of exporting, importing. I said, but if you're going to go into politics and you want to really get around the world, French is fine.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, you know, that's kind of how I look at it. You know, French is the mealy-mouth language.
Well, and it's also a geographical thing, too. I mean, Brussels is sort of the headquarters of the, you know, the international arena, in a sense, you know, you know, French is spoken there, and that's one.
Let's go on. Let's move on to what our little treat for today is, and there's a particular reason why Butch is joining us today. On the website for the last several days, a conversation has been going on about conservative principles.
And Tracy, let me break in here for just a moment. You need to cross market.
Yes, go to the website, www.AmericanConservativeParty.org, and on the front page, there is a place where new comments are coming up on the right border, and you can join in those discussions. And the one that's been going on most in the last couple days has been going on between Butch and I. Butch and me, between us.
Between Butch and me, yeah. Go ahead.
Somebody's an English major here.
No. Practically a minor, though.
Not me.
Yeah.
The reason my writing is better than my speaking is because I can edit better.
Yes.
Me too.
So, and I suggested to Bill that he get a bucket of water because this is going to be rather interesting, and I'm going to have to be cautious about what I say because this is a place where we can make some really important points, and it can be easily misinterpreted. And part of the problem is going to be me, because I'm the one doing a bunch of the talking, and frankly, you shouldn't always be listening to me too much because
because you're a raving anarchist anyway. Is that
like classical music or NPR? You need a break every once in a while. All right, this started many months ago when somebody promoted to the website a discussion of Russell Kirk's 10 Principles of Conservatism.
Yep.
Now, the first time I read them, I went, yeah, okay, and tossed him off to the side. And then about 2 months later, about 3 months ago, somebody brought him up again, someone totally different, brought him up as something to look at for the American Conservative Party as a document that would help explain conservative principles. And I thought, okay, I need to actually spend some time and read what this gentleman has wrote. And I did. And I've got to say, it was interesting, but it was also very clearly classical conservatism that was being written about. And that's not bad, but it's not what our founding fathers were strong about. As a matter of fact, our founding fathers were, by their own definition, raving liberals.
Yes, they were.
Mm-hmm. If there could be a neoliberal name back in the 1700s, that's what they would have called themselves. Conservatives would have been the last thing they would have considered themselves, because back then, conservatives were called monarchists.
Mm-hmm.
People that supported the king, not the United States as an independent country. But as much as I understood that, I did write a fairly long essay, not rebutting, but discussing his points from a more classical liberal point of view, my point of view, obviously. But then I thought it was a really good idea, so I wrote, for me, this is not for anybody else, but I did post it because I wanted to discuss it. I wanted to have a debate about it. My principles of conservatism. Now, I'm going to read these fast. They're on the website. If you go to the website, AmericanConservativeParty.org, and in our little search box on the left, put in conservatism, this will come up in the search results. Okay? My principles, Tracy's principles of conservatism, not the American Conservative Party. I put them there for discussion. One, first, the conservative believes that rights are inherent in each human's existence. Any problems here? Any issues?
No. Just read through them.
Second.
We can go back point by point.
Okay. Second, the conservative acknowledges tradition without establishing rituals. Third, conservatives are guided by personal responsibility. Fourth, conservatives choose choice. Fifth, conservatives are imperfect. Freedom is messy. Sixth, conservatives are persuaded that freedom and prosperity are linked. Seventh, the conservative perceives the need for prudent restraints upon power. Eighth, the thinking conservative understands that change happens in a prosperous society. And ninth, the conservative is part of a diverse society. Now, on the website, there's a large discussion about each of these points. But Butch has raised a concern about one.
Yeah, sure. Actually, the second one and even the fourth one, just because of semantics and wording. But and to get that one out of the way, I just think the word choice has been co-opted by a movement that I find somewhat, at its extreme, very abhorrent. So I and not even that the movement is abhorrent at its core, but that stealing the word choice from the English language and using it for something else is, I've always found, sort of offensive. And I don't think that number four really accomplishes much. But the issue at hand is number two, obviously, and it was the conservative respects traditions while not establishing rituals. Am I saying that right?
The conservative acknowledges traditions without establishing rituals.
Right. Right. So my position on that is it didn't make a lot of sense for me for a party, even a conservative party, or even one could argue especially a conservative party, to have a position against rituals. Something about that struck me as odd. I'm sure you could pare it down and define it a certain way where, we're not saying we're against rituals, we're saying we're against establishing rituals, etc. But nonetheless, it felt to me like there was a particular point of, making a stand or a position against rituals. And that struck me as odd, and so I made some comments about it. And what happened through the course of the conversation was I took the position that, and I take the position, that rituals and traditions are a part of our society, and that we as conservatives should, A, as individuals, support those traditions and rituals that we feel as individuals help society. That does not mean that we try to enforce traditions either by law or otherwise on others, but that we should always, as individuals and as conservative individuals, support the traditions that we feel like are positive influences on our society. And the reason for that is because, as conservatives, we believe in limited government. And conservatives, if the conservative position is that government is not the solution to all of our problems, then we as individuals, as conservatives, need to support alternatives to government. And that was my point from the very beginning of that. But anyway, that's why I felt like taking a position against rituals was not productive. Number one, it limits choices. And number two, there are certain roles that traditions and rituals in varying ways and in varying kinds serve in our society, and when the needs that those traditions and rituals and institutions and groups and communities serve, when those needs are not served by those institutions, then government typically is called upon to step in and serve those needs. So I think in order to be good libertarians, we need to be good conservatives.
Well, and my problem with your position continues to be, in what realm are we speaking? And generally, you have made the comment here and in posts that we're talking about in our individual lives.
Right.
That we're not speaking of as the party at this point, but we're speaking of as individual conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
And my question still becomes, I'll go somewhere else and then come back to what my question has been in our discussion. How would you support those traditions that you feel are important? In what way, how would you express that support?
You mean as an individual?
Yeah.
Okay, well, let me throw it right back at you and, get used to this because I'm going to do this often. If you had a certain community-based organization or tradition or group that you wanted to support as an individual, how would you support them?
See, I'm not going to answer that.
Okay, here comes my bucket of cold water here.
Okay. And the reason I'm going to do it is this way, because we're speaking about individuals here. Okay? You're asking
And keep in mind, and not to parry, but that is what we're talking about. And the original post was my principles of conservatism, Tracy's principles, and our view of what it means to be conservative. It doesn't mean the party's view. It doesn't mean the party's positions or platform or whatever. What it means is, first of all, my principles or our own individual principles of conservatism, but also what we could easily define as general principles of conservatism that individuals should apply, right, or can apply or whatever.
Well,
see, it's interesting. I had a discussion today about this very topic, and it came across kind of unexpectedly, but it was with a good Republican friend of mine. And I said something to the effect of, well, conservatives should support nonprofit groups, and conservatives should support, community-based organizations that they feel are going to be helpful to their community. And, 15 minutes was focused on the word should. Okay. Mm-hmm. And if we cannot as individuals, Tracy, promote and support certain things and posit that things should be a certain way without operating under the assumption that our support and saying things should be this way is equal to let's make a law, or let's make sure government enforces that everybody should do those things, then I think we're missing something. If we can't as individuals take positions on issues without assuming that means we want, a law enforcing people to do those things, then I think we've lost our ability to think logically. And we lost our ability to associate and to operate as a society in almost any way.
Okay.
We can talk about things without saying, oh, there needs to be a law. I mean, that's very important.
The reason I reorient this to the idea of individuals is because the question you asked came back was, how would I support institutions or organizations that are doing good things, that I think are doing helpful things.
Right.
And the problem with that is those institutions, those organizations are part of the society that we are functioning within. And I'm not adverse to this. Okay, I've said this to you. I've said it posted because I need to be clear about this. I don't disagree with the idea that we should support those organizations and institutions that we think do good things. Okay? I think being charitable is something that is part of what makes conservatives the way they are. I don't want to say it doesn't make them conservatives. I think conservatives by nature tend to be charitable, not because they're conservatives. They're conservatives because they tend to be charitable.
And there's numbers to prove that, actually.
There's numbers to prove it, and it's quite clear that way. Which is why the argument that gets thrown at us all the time that conservatives are greedy, knuckle-dragging, poor people hating, monsters is just...
Is nonsense.
Ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
It's nonsense.
Sure.
Okay. Now, that said, because organizations and institutions are designed to help, their choice is to either completely rely upon people coming to them to help them or to ask for that help. And I don't think there's anything wrong with the asking. But asking can be done in good ways and bad ways. And I think when institutions and organizations reach a certain point, they stop asking in nice ways and start asking in hard ways.
Mm-hmm.
All of that tends to be irrelevant to the general discussion, except for the part where it becomes part of society. When those institutions become institutionalized in society is the place where I think they have they crossed that line in to being thankful for what they receive to being demanding in what they're asking for.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. Are we operating under the assumption, and this is important, that some institutions, whatever in whatever form that they take, are required in order for society to function? Or are we operating under the assumption that any institutions, regardless of how charitable or how how effective they are, how useful they are we operating under the assumption that no institutions are required, no cohesive groups or grouping or tribalism or whatever the term is required in order for society to operate? Are we operating under that assumption?
I would suggest to you that the society that we live in functions because those organizations and institutions exist.
Okay, and but
I'm not saying that that's good or that it's right.
Okay,
well,
what I'm saying is, do you feel that it is possible for a modern society to function without some of those institutions in place?
I can answer it in this way, and it may not be the way you'd like it to be answered, but I'm going to try it anyway.
Okay.
I was raised Roman Catholic.
Sure.
Okay. Southside Irish Catholics in the city of Chicago. Everybody went to church on Sunday. Big, huge cathedral churches on the south side of Chicago. I was raised Catholic. After I left home, I left the Catholic Church quickly and without regret and looking backwards and went on my merry way as a young adult without all the strictures of home or, you know, church or anything. And, of course, you know, I did stupid things because that's what 20-year-olds do when all the restrictions have been lifted and you can do anything you want.
Sure.
However, I got involved with a Christian organization and was very involved with it, and it was something that was very important to me for that period of time. And then I left that and have not been a big fan of religion after that point. Very supportive because I think it has a very, very good use in our lives and a very important purpose in our lives. But for me, you know, people say, well, you know, you may not believe everything that we do now, but you were still that way. And I acknowledge that. I could not be who I am today without having been raised in the Catholic Church, without having gone through that period of time in the fundamentalist Christian churches. Because they changed me. They formed who I am. And who I am, you can't take that stuff out and change me without changing me. And I like me the way I am. So those organizations and those institutions that you are speaking of are an integral part in how our society has formed. And even if you could walk away from them, even if you could have a society that could leave them behind, their imprint on how society functions, on how it exists, is there, and it can never be removed.
Well, okay, but sure they could. I mean, and I'm speaking as a devil's advocate, but I mean, three generations down the road, if all those institutions were phased out, you know, where, you know, they didn't exist anymore, then, you know, are you saying that, you know, a modern society could continue to exist without them?
I would suggest to you that institutions that functioned in similar ways that would take upon themselves the mantle of certain functions of those institutions we want to get rid of, the new institutions would come up to take those functions.
Okay,
that would
but there's
still
institutions, Tracy. But there's still traditions, there's still rituals, there's still functions, there's still groups, there's still organizations that serve purposes. My point is society, and especially a modern Western property-driven free market society, I do not believe can function without some sort of cohesiveness, without something to tie us together and make us operate as humans outside of the market. That is something I believe, and I think you might disagree, but it is obvious that we are in it. We are in a society that does operate that way. And my position is, if we believe in limited government, and if we believe that government should be the absolute last arbiter of our sense of community and our traditions and our rituals and our families and our et cetera, then we better be supportive of the alternatives. And because if we are not, then once all those institutions don't exist, then there's only one institution left to fill the voids, and that institution is government.
Okay.
And one reason for that is not everybody is like you and me, right? Maybe you and I could operate, and maybe Bill. Bill hasn't said a word lately, but he's.
I have my bucket of water here.
Yeah. Okay. All right. but maybe the three of us could operate without church, without family, without. A pickup basketball game every month. I mean, whatever it is. I mean, just pick anything that we choose to do that makes us feel part of the community, or cause that we support that makes us feel helpful in our community. Whatever they are, maybe we could operate without those things. But we're not everybody, and we have to be realistic about we're in a society where people have differing dependencies and differing independencies, and if we operate under the assumption that there is a scale, there is a spectrum of people who need other people and people who don't need other people, that if we were to operate as a society where the people who need other people have avenues and tools available to them to associate with other people or get what they need, then we better be supportive of those institutions outside of government that fill those needs, or government will find a way to fill those people's needs. And it's very simple. It's called the somebody needs to do something itis.
Okay.
That is
all
how
right.
Progressive policies are passed. Go ahead.
Okay. Fine. All right. You know, my issue is, and it will continue to be, as long as you believe that those institutions must exist, otherwise government will step in to take over those roles, that we have to support those institutions. I don't disagree with you that those institutions should be supported. It is like being on the Titanic and telling people the boat is sinking. Okay? The choice is, stay on the boat that's sinking or jump into the cold North Sea. People are going to say, I'm going to stay with this sinking ship because right now I'm warm and dry. And no matter how much it's sinking and no matter how much I can see that it's sinking, I'm not leaving warm and dry for cold and wet.
Okay,
we have to provide them with something else to jump into. I don't want it to be giving up one nightmare for another nightmare.
Okay, here's my problem. What is sinking? That I don't understand that analogy.
in this case, it is the belief that other people should take over the responsibilities that you and I have abdicated.
Okay, all right. See, that's
it's society that's
insane.
That's thinking.
That is not what I'm arguing, and that is not what I mean by other institutions. That I mean, no. Here's the thing: if you're gonna let's back up to the question I asked you earlier. If you would ask
okay,
me the same question, how would you support an organization? Right.
Right.
Number one, if I had any money, the organizations that I would support would have three criteria. And if we're talking about, let's just back up and say charitable organizations, right?
Okay,
let's say there's
one,
a local
charity. I'm going to take this down pretty quick. Pick one.
Okay. Well, I mean, it doesn't matter. Call it a local church. Call it a soup kitchen. I mean, it doesn't matter what it is. It's a charitable organization designed to help people who can't, you know, who are not currently in a position to help themselves. Right?
Okay.
So
now
that's
you want
one
to
example.
Support that
that's not the only. That's not the only example, but that's one very simple one.
Okay.
You're
going to support this institution, correct?
Right. There are three
okay,
things
now wait
that
a second.
I want.
Wait a second. Wait a second. You're going to support this institution because you believe that it helps in society, for whatever purpose it's doing something good. You're going to support it.
Right,
okay?
But there's a reason I'm going to support it. Okay.
I'm going to ask you what happens when you're the only one that's supporting it.
Well, that's my point.
What happens
when you're
the only one
supporting it? That's the whole point of this conversation, Tracy, is that we should encourage people who have the position of limited government or limiting government, that we should make sure that we're encouraging those people to support the institutions they believe in. Otherwise, those institutions will go away and government will inevitably step in. That's my argument. My
and
point
my
is
comment
this,
is,
though, there
what
are
happens
three...
if they don't support it?
Well, I just said it. Government will step in. Right?
Okay. But if you don't want government to step in.
Right.
Okay. And you can't get people to support that organization. We both agree that government's going to step in because there's insufficient reason for them not to. But ignore that for the second. How do you approach that institution and say it's dying because it doesn't have support?
Very
no matter
simple.
How much you work,
and that's what I'm trying to tell you. There are three things that I would demand from that institution.
Okay.
And that is, if we're talking about a safety net, that the safety net be temporary, that it be rehabilitative, and that it be accountable. Because a government institution is going to be neither of those three things.
Okay.
And so if you have an organization that is supported voluntarily by citizens, then that organization is accountable directly to the people who are supporting that organization. In the case of government, you don't have that direct accountability. That money is confiscated involuntarily from the populace and given to organizations that do not have the accountability, do not have the incentive to make anything temporary, and actually have the opposite incentive to make sure it's permanent, because that's how their salaries are paid. So
yes,
my point is that if we choose, and it's again, it's choice, if we choose the organizations we support and we hold them accountable, and part of that accountability is making sure that they provide solutions and not and hands up instead of handouts, then I think that it's more effective.
Okay, my problems are pretty straightforward. If those institutions that you wish to support start to die because they lack support. And you can make lots of arguments and yelling and screaming and jumping up and down and asking people to support this very good organization because the alternative is government. And I'm going to suggest to you that we have seen this play out over this past 10 months. Okay? People, you can either, you know, support those organizations that don't that do things that government can't
right.
and shouldn't do, or you can support Obama, who is going to increase those government organizations and push out the charitable volunteer organizations.
Sure.
And we have seen that choice being made.
Okay. So what's your point?
Okay.
Well, I make that point, Tracy, because I'm not understanding that.
I'm not getting it either. I yeah, go ahead.
Okay, your choice is to have limited government or to have more government. Okay? And that was the choice, and I'll be the first to say that McCain was a flawed example of the limited government argument. But there's no doubt that Obama was a very good example of the more government.
Okay, but why
okay,
not?
Okay, yeah, no, let me break
thank
in
you,
here
Bill,
for
go
a
ahead.
Second. Tracy, if you're trying to make the argument that the choice before the American people was a choice between limited government and expansive government, I think your argument fails. President-elect Obama's campaign was not run on that, nor was Senator John McCain's campaign run on that. Obama's campaign was run on change. McCain's campaign was run on, I'm a war hero, I have experience, I will keep you safe. The people chose change, not because they were making a conscious choice of, oh, we want expansive government or we want limited government. They wanted a change from Bush.
Okay, I want
President
to stop
them. Bush and Obama very clearly made that case and tied Senator John McCain to Bush.
You know what? That's
yeah?
You're perfectly correct. That is what the outer shell of the election was all about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And that's what most people paid attention to.
Yes.
Okay? But we were noticing something deeper. We have 3 minutes, so I can't get into this whole much. I do want to say the following thing. Here's where, Butch, you and I agree on this actually in a great number of places. Okay? You see, and it's strictly a matter of perspective, you see the benefit that those institutions and rituals bring to our society and to our personal lives. And you want to encourage that and support that because it's a positive thing from your perspective.
On a personal choice basis, yes.
Okay. And I think that's fine, and I think that's wonderful, and I couldn't agree with you more. I agree with you completely. From that perspective, you should be able to do so.
Okay.
Here's my perspective, and it's different. Society uses traditions to create structure, define acceptable activities, and limits on freedoms.
Okay, here's my response to that, because we don't have that much time left. Let me break this down to the simplest institution that we have. Anybody want to guess what the absolute most fundamental institution that we have in place?
No, top guys don't ask.
Family, right?
Okay.
Yep.
That's the absolute smallest unit, you know.
Yep.
However that family is structured, you have two adults maybe and kids. You have adults and kids. You have brothers and sisters. You have whatever. If you think, Bill, you have kids too, yes?
Yes.
No, okay. If you think you live in a free market society in your family, you're dreaming.
Yep.
Okay?
Yeah.
So if you think you live in an individualist sovereign world within your family, you're dreaming.
Yeah.
We all know that's not true. So the individual sovereignty has limits. If it wasn't for children or foreign policy, the libertarianism would be the solution to everything in the world. We all know that. We've all read, Ayn Rand. We all know
yep.
the arguments. The point is that there is a limit. We are a society of humans that associate. And the smallest unit being the family, my take on the whole concept of family values is if we value family, then government has less of a role. So now what the next rung on the scale could be as small as your neighborhood. It could be a church. It could be whatever it is.
Okay, we have to stop there.
Go ahead.
Okay.
We have only about 30 seconds left. So, Butch, I want to say thank you. We're going to continue this conversation.
I enjoyed it.
Discussions on the website. Bill, I think you didn't have to use too much of the water, and I appreciate that a whole lot. it's only 12 degrees outside, so it would be kind of cold.
Yeah. I can't imagine.
I encourage everybody to look at the website, AmericanConservativeParty.org. Join, look at conservative principles, be part of the solution, not part of the Obama nation. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks, Butch.
Hey, thanks a lot. See you guys.
Okay.